What do I love about Wales?
My little patch.
This one. This.
Ten.
It's the land of the kutch, the land of the comfort.
Around here, it's about the community.
Looking after the land.
Our sea.
And beyond.
That is what Wales means to me.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 247 of the Metabilis 2 podcast, which features myself, Ben.
And I am David, and another new episode of Doctor Who.
Whoa, our favorite show. Episodes are flooding out like there's no tomorrow.
And another one written by Russell T. Davis, 73 yards.
73 yards. Interesting. Interesting choice of number and measuring. Yes, 73 yards. Here it comes.
And RTD describes this as Welsh folk horror.
Yeah.
You've been in Wales.
I've been in Wales.
Quite a few times. Is Welsh folk horror a thing?
Well, folk horror is obviously a big thing at
yes.
the moment.
Yes.
You know, in movies and on TV. Mark Gatiss from TV's Doctor Who is is charged with coining the phrase folk horror back in the early noughties. So, yeah, it's a big deal. I don't really think this is really folk horror, to be honest. I mean, there's a mysterious fairy ring and there's a creepy pub. But actually, the pub is full of normal people rather than creepy people.
Right.
They're just normal, creepy Welsh people. They're not folk horror. They're not folk horror Welsh people.
We're not talking Wicker Man pub people.
Yeah. They're not going to set Ruby on fire or throw her into the ocean or anything like that. I think that's taking it a bit far. I mean, I think there's elements in this which are leaning into the thing that is apparently happening in the Doctor Who universe currently, which is there is a lot more magic and weirdness going on. And actually, I might have something to say about that slightly later on if we come to it.
Yeah.
I'm a connoisseur of folk horror.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan. I think that was a bit of RTD style misdirection in describing, getting people to think it was going to be one thing, creepy pub. They're going to sacrifice her to the sea devils or something. but they didn't. She left the creepy pub and all was fine, apart from the fact that she's being followed around by what was, spoiler alert, revealed to be herself.
Her old self. 80-year-old self, yeah.
Her 80-or-so-old self. What did you think of the kind of supernatural elements?
Yeah, it was a very Dr. Light story.
Oh, Dr. Light, So, I mean, that was one of my main, not beefs, I suppose, but my main sort of like, where was the doctor? Where did he go?
Right, yeah.
I mean, I guess I could work out where he went if I thought about it a bit, but we weren't told where he went. He just he wasn't there.
Well, Carla's theory was he was pottering in the TARDIS as the shed, but he vanished.
No, he vanished. I mean, and again, if we're going to say that this is some kind of alternate timeline that, you know, the fairies created or something, or maybe it was the TARDIS, I've got a theory about that as well, then the Doctor wasn't in that alternate timeline for some reason.
Right.
I personally, what I would have done is I would have had the Doctor being the first person going to meet the old lady, and he just ran away.
That would have had a better explanation,
well.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then she would have been like, oh shit, what the hell's going on? And then, you know, she would have been more drawn into the story. I would have done that, but then, I mean, we're always like saying RTD should have done it slightly differently. But anyway, I mean, I didn't miss him. I thought it was fine that he wasn't there.
I did miss him, I guess.
Oh.
I felt the lack of the Doctor. And if you only have 8 stories or 8 episodes in a series, and one of them is going to be a Dr. Light because the Doctor is still, or the actor who's playing the Doctor is still filming on his previous job, I kind of feel shortchanged a little bit, I guess.
that's true. I mean, but, you know, I mean, the Barbie movie isn't going to shoot itself.
Yeah, it's true. You know, it was either that or Sex Education. One of the two was occupying.
Oh, well, he was in that Apple TV 8th Air Force thing as well, as one of the Red Tails. So, yeah, he's a busy man.
Mm-hmm.
So, luckily, both Barbie and also, I think, the 8th Air Force show, and, of course, Sex Education, all shot in Britain. So he doesn't have to travel far to be in other things.
No.
But, yeah. Did you not... Did you... I mean, is it just that... you felt that, well, if the show is called Doctor Who, it needs to have Doctor Who in it.
I mean, we could have called this Mission to the Unknown.
Mission to the Unknown, exactly. Or did you feel that Millie Gibson, a.k.a. Ruby Sunday, didn't have the heft to carry an episode on her own? I mean, this was reminding me of was Turn Left, where Donna, you know, was a strong enough character to carry that episode. And there was some strong enough callbacks to things that had happened before to make that a really strong, really strong 45 minutes of television. I've got some problems with this one in terms of that.
Yeah, I can't delay this any longer. Thought this was most boring episode of Doctor Who I have watched in a long time. And this season is coming to be the monster light or the no monster season at all.
True.
I just couldn't buy the whole premise that Carla would abandon Ruby. And
that felt weak. I'll give you that. Yep.
The most interesting thing was the scenes in the pub. Which were funny, and they had, you know, like you said, character archetypes from Welsh pubs. even the Susan Twist bit at the beginning was interesting, and I liked that Ruby's going, haven't we met someone before, and seeming familiar? So I thought that was handled well. But just what this specter or ghost or future echo of Ruby would say to people that would cause them to flee, or like with Carla, give her like a side eye and just disdain. Honestly, I'm not sure that Millie Gibson is a strong enough actor at this point in her career to carry this off.
I like the episode, obviously. I liked it more than you did. you didn't like it at all. So it remains to be seen exactly how much I liked it.
I kind of referred to it as 73 yawns.
73 yawns. I don't think she had the Catherine Tate-ness to carry this one off. Especially wasn't really convinced by, you know, Ruby at 30, Ruby at 40. I guess we had birthday cards in the window, but she looked exactly the same. They could have worked a little bit harder on that one to make her look old. I mean, I think one of the things that made Turn Left work so well is that it called back to events that we'd already seen previously in the season, which was kind of smart of it, basically. This wasn't. And obviously, you know, there's some kind of alternate timeline that's been created. I mean, my own internal fan theory, and I actually need to go back. I should have gone back and had a look to confirm this, is that the fairy circle possibly could have been in the shape of the TARDIS console. Or it could have been. So, you know, this is the TARDIS is doing something. It's creating an alternate timeline without the Doctor for Millie to do something important. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, that's maybe my own kind of fan canon kicking in there. But I think the whole App Gwillem stuff, you know, that's kind of parachuted in, I felt, from, you know, years and years.
Yeah.
I mean, Russell's done this before.
Yep.
It didn't have time to build.
Right.
I mean, again, we've had evil prime ministers. The Master's been the prime minister. We've had incompetent prime ministers, Harriet Jones. Another Welsh person, obviously, with a name like Jones. But, I mean, that's built up over, you know, we had an entire season to build up to Harold Saxon's shenanigans. I don't think we've had enough. I mean, just simply have the Doctor kind of mention, you know, App Gwillem in the first minute of the show, vanish, and then, bang, he turns up later on.
Right.
You know, if this had been a two-parter, yeah, that would have given the time for the story to build. But I felt that was all a little bit perfunctory and like, okay, yeah, I guess I agree with you that the, you know, this is all, we're in kind of sapphire and steel territory here. Nothing really has to be explained. I read online that someone online said, well, this episode was basically, I think it was Twitter, X, but I'm begging Elon's pardon, was saying that, you know, this was a vibe. Which I think is something that the kids say nowadays, that it's not really a story, it's a feeling.
Yeah.
And the whole thing was a vibe about mysteriousness and Millie Gibson, Ruby Sunday, and didn't really have to add up to anything at all as long as it did its thing throughout its 45 minutes worth of thingness.
Yeah, I need more than a feeling.
Yeah, no, and I'm not saying that that's a good thing, but I mean that kind of described it quite well to me. It's just some things that happened in a particular order to give you a particular feeling about something, a feeling of mystery, a feeling of dislocation. You know, there were a bunch of callbacks to stuff. I mean, I made notes, you know, I mean, the old Ruby Sunday in the hospital room stretching out her hands is like a direct swipe from 2001, you know, spoiler alert at the end.
Right.
When
also reminded me of Clara in Last Christmas, too.
Oh, yeah.
Just like how last week with Boom, it was Moffat exploring themes that he had already done, this really seemed like RTD exploring themes that he had already done, not necessarily in Doctor Who, but in other things. His writing.
Yeah. I mean, another note I made, I mean, in classic Who was always taking, you know, folkloric things and giving them a sci-fi spin.
Mm-hmm.
I think this was taking sci-fi stuff and giving it a kind of folkloric spin, you know, creepy woman standing where you can't get to her, mysterious circles in the, you know, the doc, yeah, it's a time machine, it comes in a sci-fi way, but it gets all kind of folklored up.
Mm-hmm.
I could have done with slightly more of that. I could have done with Robert Ap Gwilym. He's Robert, right? Was he something?
Roger Ap Gwilym.
you laugh, but I have a great great uncle called Griffiths. Because Welsh people, they call it the same name always.
Mm-hmm.
So Roger Ap Gwilym, the I can't remember the actor's name, but he's an up and coming Welsh actor, good looking, long hair, etc. You know, it would have been really helpful to me if we had signaled him being evil from the get go. You know, if he'd been old.
Put him in last year's anniversary specials at just a cameo or something.
As a cameo, or have him be old, or have like a facial scar, or, you know, I don't know, look like Nigel Farage. that would have been helpful, so like we could believe him as evil to begin with. I think you've just said it. I mean, I think that political piece needed a lot more build up to it.
You needed a more background to the world that Ruby is part of.
What note did I make here? I can't read that. Oops. Never mind. Yes, you know, it's like turn left. It's kind of last of the Time Lords. Companion wanders around for their entire life, and then it gets solved in the end. I wrote down Dead Zone, you know, the Stephen King, David Cronenberg movie where Christopher Walken is able to see the future and, like, bam, realizes that a presidential candidate is going to turn out to be a nuclear missile launching Donald Trump and has to do something about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a whole bunch of things going on here. 45 minutes, especially if we're going to sit around in a pub for 10 minutes, having a laugh with the locals, is not long enough to get this working, I felt.
Yeah. It seemed like Russell was trying to have things to say there about stereotypes of Welsh people. And I'm guessing, well, Millie is a Londoner, so
she is
prejudiced against Welsh people, thinking that they're superstitious, and the Welsh pub denizens having a laugh at her expense at that. I thought that was all really effective, but then it kind of undermines it when there's a specter out there that she's not imagining something, and it is something there.
Yeah. And I think what one of the things confused me, there was an incuriosity about the specter from everyone else. You know, the bloke who came out of the pub and went and talked to the ancient Millie, and the ancient Millie said something, and he was like, ran away.
Mm-hmm.
Surely the following morning, you know, his wife would have said, "What did she say to you? Why did you run away?"
The workaround that RTD has is just ask her in reference to Ruby. And so it's always blame Ruby, and it's sort of like,
yeah. And I think, you know, the fact that we don't know what the woman says, the ancient Ruby says, is more because RTD can't work out what she would say,
right?
And that's why we don't know. So that's a, you know, it's a kind of out of universe explanation, which I don't think is helpful. And you're right. I mean, I think, you know, Ruby's mother, her reaction, that's the key reaction, was, you know, horrifying in some ways, and wasn't fully justified. Again, I read online, you know, reading reviews of this. Maybe this is feeding into, you know, Ruby's worst fears, fear of rejection. You know, your own mother didn't want you.
Right.
Which, you know, again, moves it into quite sort of horrifying psychological territory. How that kind of manifests itself in this kind of circular, you know, bootstrap timeline thing. You know, I guess this is an alternate timeline that was created by somebody. I'm going to, you know,
right.
Whether it was the TARDIS, whether it was fairies, you know, goblins, who knows, basically. And I guess that's mm-hmm. what I mean. We're coming back to this idea of the show being a vibe. Who knows? Well, nobody knows. It's just, it's the thing. It's the right. thing that it is.
So previously in the RTD Doctor Who universe, I think that we've had a fairy story in Torchwood, right? In the first season of Torchwood, there was a story about the girl who was the chosen one who
right.
That Jack had to let go. Otherwise, the fairies would just keep killing everyone that was in the way. I think Small Worlds by Peter J. Hammond.
Right.
I thought that was a better incorporation of the idea of fairy in the story than the ghost story that RTD had with 73 yards. And yeah. maybe it's more concrete and more fey, but
right.
it seemed like all there wasn't any extra pieces in the box left over.
Right.
So everything was
nicely put
there deliberately to fit all together. And it's a little too clean, perhaps. It's like a bottle episode to this. There's nothing. I mean, maybe this Gwilym character will come back. Ap Gwilym will come back.
Roger Ap Gwilym, yeah.
In the future, maybe he will be there in the Empire of Death in the finale. But if he is, I would have liked him introduced earlier. And maybe we have to go back and look at the previous seven stories.
Yeah.
To see if there was, oh, maybe he was in the background somewhere, or you
maybe.
See a newspaper or something that he's won his first by-election or something. But I think you need to seed that a little bit earlier, like RTD has been seeding the Susan Twist character coming in, or or the snow coming down whenever Ruby gets feeling like she's alone or lost or in jeopardy.
I mean, I think we spent a lot of time on Susan Twist, and, you know, we are 4 or 5... plus episodes in, if you count the specials, mm-hmm. and we still don't know what the hell's going on. That's some deep seeding that's going on. I think you're right. We could have done with a little bit more support for this episode by having, you know, Roger Ap Gwilym be a thing and doing some things a bit earlier on.
Yeah.
Unless there's some kind, unless he's a fairy or something, you know. Hmm. Again, I was confused. You know, she does the 73 yards thing, which initially I thought would have something to do with rugby, but I don't think it does, because I mean 73 is a pretty random number, and someone Millie's age is not going to be measuring things in yards.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's been taught the metric system,
right?
It would have been meters. She wouldn't, a 20 year old, if that's how old Ruby Sunday is, wouldn't know what a yard was. I mean, I can guarantee they don't know what a yard is. It's maybe something that happens in American football, if they can be bothered to be concerned about that. So that was weird. And that wasn't really explained, other than, I guess, you know, maybe fairies work in yards.
Maybe.
Who knows? Anyway, but I mean, Ap Gwilym runs off at the end. It's like, well,
right.
everybody be going like, well, where the fuck's he gone?
Right.
Bring him back. We're just about to launch some nuclear missiles or whatever was going on.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a bunch of cascading questions that normal people would have that I don't think Ruby Sunday would have been able to avoid being involved in some way for, you know, the next 50, 60 years of her life.
Yeah, we're not even touching upon, like, I'm going to go right back to how everything just fits. It's sort of like, oh, yeah, Roger Ap Gwilym's nickname is Mad Jack, and we're going to have don't step on the grass at the rugby stadium or on the football pitch, because that, by her doing so, that alerts the security, so you have guns drawn on her, so to build up the tension. It just all just seems really contrived and not an organically flowing story. It just seems like everything has to be there for this to work, for this loop. And
yeah, no, true. I mean, I think, you know, even down to, if his name is Roger Ap Gwilym, why not Mad Roger?
Right.
That would have signaled him slightly earlier in the, you know, or maybe he could have been John at Willem. So, you know, John is Jack. That would have worked, but I mean, we didn't have that. And, you know, it took me a little time to cotton on. Oh, yeah, so the Mad Jack they were banging on about is the name for Roger Ap Gwilym. Mm-hmm. That's an odd name.
Right.
So someone who's literally not called Jack.
Right.
You know, so I don't know. Maybe a little bit of script editing here. I think the challenge of someone writing their own show might have helped. You know, shown it to Stephen. Let him have a look at it. Give you some notes.
The problem is the depth, and we're...
Depth.
Where you have a character like Ruby's mom, Carla, the obvious comparison is going to be to Jackie Tyler.
Right.
And Jackie had the ability or the luxury to develop over two seasons. She was basically the main audience identification character in like Love and Monsters, and she had her own story arc, and you could sympathize with her. And so if Jackie was going to do something, it felt more real. But with Carla, we don't know her well enough, and she already has been grumpy Carla once in the story with the Goblin story. There was no Ruby, and so this is... I mean, that to me is more memorable, grumpy Carla, than loving Carla. Of, you know, like Ruby's a big part of her life and is important.
Grumpy Carla is more of a character than non-grumpy Carla. You're right.
Right. And so Russell hasn't given us enough time with nice Carla to feel like grumpy Carla is really a thing, other than she's kind of seems out to be always grumpy Carla.
Yeah. No, it's time. I think it's a... conflation of, you know, Disney. I'm going to blame Disney here. Disney saying you've got 8 episodes, get on with it, and Russell wanting to put everything that he wants to put into every episode. You know, he wants to spend time in the pub demolishing, you know, stereotypes about the Welsh. Mm-hmm. He wants to have an adopted child. He wants to have some kind of weird snow thing mm-hmm. happening. He wants to have Mrs. Brian May walk on every episode and go like, oh, look at me, I'm looking at the audience. You know, I'm breaking the fourth wall. Mm-hmm. He wants a bunch of things to happen in each episode, which are maybe not fully supporting that episode. You know, I'd have gotten out the pub really quickly and pile straight into the evil of the new prime minister come 2046, you know.
Would it work better, since you have Gatwa for only 8 episodes, but I imagine Millie Gibson is more available, and
yeah, totally.
RTD likes making stories about the companion. We see things through the companion's eyes.
Right.
So what if you have more Dr. Light episodes, and you stretch that out back to 12 episodes or 13 episodes a season, but then you give more adventure of Ruby and what her life is like. You stretch some things out, but I think the compactness of this, it's not giving the supporting cast time to develop, and I don't feel like it's giving the world that RTD, this supernatural world, is giving room to develop, other than you have Kate Lethbridge-Stewart coming in saying, yeah, everything's getting more supernatural. And it's sort of like, maybe we need to see that more happening to Millie outside of traveling with the Doctor.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's interesting you bring up kind of more Dr. Light episodes, which I think would work really well. This is maybe just a sidebar, but I did notice that at the very beginning, the Doctor talks about the war between the land and the sea, which, as far as I remember, was being touted by RTD at some point as one of the spin-off involving Sea Devils.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the, you know, spin-offs are still in his mind. And I think if we were running some spin-offs concurrently with this, you know, if this was a kind of a class situation, you know, kicks off with Capaldi and then runs off on its own for a bit. I mean, obviously that show wasn't very successful.
Right.
I'm told. I've never seen it, sadly. That might give, you know, if Roger Ap Gwilym was a character in a, you know, a Sea Devil war thing that was, I don't know what would happen, whatever.
Well, which is why they want to use nuclear missiles.
Who wouldn't want to blow up Sea Devils with nuclear missiles, bastards? You know, and that makes him a racist as well, you know, because he doesn't like Sea Devils. Mm-hmm. You know, he's definitely Nigel Farage at that point. You know, not only a people trying to invade Britain, but they're also green and dress in net curtains.
Right.
So, you know, that could work. I mean, another little sidebar. It's interesting you bring up P.J. Hammond writing Torchwood, another spinoff, because P.J. Hammond, of course, created Sapphire and Steel, which is what one of the things this was reminding me of, where, like, you know, it's just a it's just is the wrong word. It's in inverted commas, a vibe. It's a feeling. You're getting a feeling from this. You're not really getting a plot. So, you know, I think, and obviously for kind of British sci-fi aficionados, you know, Sapphire and Steel is the kind of gold standard for how much can you accept in your sci-fi.
Yes.
One thing that kind of popped into my head as well, and this may be too much of a deep cut for our listener, RTD is definitely, he said so, he's a 2000 AD fan, so the famous British anthology comic, which ran a excellent storyline in the early to mid 80s, which is when Russell would have been reading 2000 AD at university, in the Strontium Dog strip, which was about a kind of a mutant bounty hunter from the future. Anyway, for various reasons, the strip has kind of time stuff in it. People get sent back in time quite a lot, and a group of evildoers get sent back in time by mistake, and our hero Johnny Alpha has to go back and deal with them, and they get sent back to Viking times, and spoiler alert, the evildoers start killing a bunch of Vikings, and that starts to affect the future. Because they're killing people's ancestors. And one of the ways that the upset of the timeline occurs is that mythical creatures start appearing. So trolls and goblins and other things start. So, I wouldn't be surprised if actually RTD, in his kind of supernatural things are happening, is actually thinking about that 2000 AD Strontium Dog storyline, whereby something has happened to mess up the current timeline, and one of the main demonstrations of that alteration to the current timeline is the increasing presence of previously supernatural entities. And that seems to me, that's a good explanation to me of what RTD is doing right here, is that, you know, obviously something has gone wrong, stuff is happening that shouldn't be happening.
Right.
My hope is that there'll be a payoff, Legend of Ruby Sunday, End of the World, or whatever the end, two-part finale is called now, I can't remember, that will all be addressed and get solved in some kind of way, or maybe it won't.
The other inspiration that I read that's been posited that from Dale Smith, who's a common son Doctor Who, is from M.R. James. And specifically, Oh, Whistle and I'll Come to You, My Lad, which was adapted for BBC right. Two about 10 years ago, starring John Hurt.
Right.
Of all people.
Right.
And
right.
So I'm guessing that Russell probably saw this and had this in mind, because it's about an apparition that appears to this man on the beach, and it starts to disrupt his life.
Riffing off that, I wish I can remember the name of the story now, but I think it is called There's Room for One More Inside, which is another famous to me anyway, in a British ghost story where someone is haunted by an apparition who keeps saying, you know, there's room for one more inside, and he can't understand why this apparition is kind of, you know, beckoning him in, until he's in London and the bus conductor on the bus is saying to him, there's room for one more inside, and he goes, nah, I can't, you're the apparition. And then there's a hideous bus crash and everyone is killed, and he realizes, you know, he's being warned from the future to stay off the bus because it was going to crash. Anyway, so, you know, I mean, I think this is a pretty common, you know, the apparition from the future that is warning you of stuff.
Yeah.
Is pretty common. I mean, I'm also reminded of Nigel Neal's sadly lost TV production of The Road, where there are, are they medieval people? I think they're Tudor people, actually, who are like, oh, there's ghosts and apparitions. What's going on? There's like noises, and there's a, you know, the road is haunted. And all these, you know, medieval people are like, wow, what the hell's going on? You know, it's the devil or whatever. And what it actually is a nuclear war in the future. is haunting the past. So the massive, the killing of everybody has effects into the past. So again, that's probably he's thinking about that too. And he's mixing all these things together, and it's not really anything other than that,
The other little bit with M.R. James, and I think this may be where he got the 73 from, is that's how old M.R. James was when he died.
Oh, interesting.
He lived 73 years.
Oh, okay.
So if that was a direct homage to James, then that would be one way of slipping it in.
True. All right. Yeah.
Because like you said, the 73, it's weird.
It is weird. It doesn't make sense. I'm sorry, I'm now trying to find out this room for one more inside thing. Apparently it's from a movie. I'm sure I read it as a story in some kind of kids' scary story anthology. Anyway, so yeah, so I think, as I said, it's this is something that doesn't add up. It adds up to less than the sum of its parts, if I think that is the right phrase. It's less than it appears to be.
So there's room for one more. It's a scary story from the book Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. It was supposedly a true ghost story from Ireland called Lord Dufferin's Ghost Story or Ghostly Warning.
Okay. And so
this one is warning them not to go in an elevator, then that crashes.
Oh, the one I read was like a bus driver. But yeah, wow.
So weird. This seems to be an archetype.
Oh my God, this is some kind of like Jungian scary archetype thing that everyone's heard of, but no one knows where it comes from. I should just be careful.
It's a Fendaline race memory.
It is a Fendaline race memory. Exactly. kudos for doing some experimentation. Boo. This is my analysis. Boo to whoever has told Russell that he can only have 8 episodes and one of them isn't. He's not allowed to have his star in.
One last bit.
Yep.
I'm not liking, and I think this was Chibnall who set this in motion, but UNIT being the retirement home for former companions or an assistance of the Doctor.
Yeah.
I just think that's kind of weak sauce.
Yeah, I mean, it gets to bring all the old people back to give them a job. But UNIT needs to be more vital than that, I think. I actually, it's funny, I was just reading a commentary. I just got a volume of collected comic strips from DWM, the Hunters of the Burning Stone anthology. And there's a kind of writer's commentary at the back from Scott Gray, why they don't get Scott to write some of this stuff, I've no idea. He's one of the best writers of Doctor Who material, in my opinion, who in the last 20, 30 years. Absolutely amazing. Anyway, and he talks about how, his problem with UNIT is that whenever UNIT turns up, if there's someone who gets out and says, like, oh, the Doctor, I've read your file, I know all about you, you're a hero, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And, he in this strip, he wanted to create a type of UNIT that wasn't reliant on the Doctor being someone who's super important, that it was more self-sufficient. And I think, you're right. I think we in Kate Lethbridge-Stewart's UNIT, we have a UNIT that is just a little bit too reliant on the Doctor and the Doctor's old companions, and UNIT should be, it should be striking out on its own. Including the weird computer that they had that we discovered that they've got now from space, which has not yet been explained to us. But anyway, maybe.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it's called now. Jinx. That's it. The Jinx, right?
Lynx. Lynx.
The Lynx.
Lynx. Maybe it's...
Whatever.
No, if Jinx is the actor, Lynx is the computer.
Inks.
It's a Nick Briggs work program.
It's the Nick Briggs work program. It's confusing. Anyway, so yeah, there's that some...
I'm definitely in the minority on this one because reading the reviews...
People like it.
People love this. They're referring to all-time greatest Doctor Who episodes, I've heard.
The kids like it.
I just was bored out of my gourd. I'm sorry. This was not for me. I'd rather watch Space Babies again than this one, honestly. And that's not saying much.
Well, you know what? Funny you mentioned that, because I just did rewatch Space Babies.
Mo?
Yes, with our next door neighbor, our 7-year-old next door neighbor, Lo. And she loved it.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, I kind of enjoyed it the second time round. I guess I had very low expectations the second time round, and that made it a more enjoyable experience.
Did you pretend there were mini Daleks there rocking back and forth?
I did. Oh, yeah. That's where the Daleks came from. Forget about Davros. The Daleks evolved from evil space babies gone evil.
Right.
Which is basically what Daleks are. They're babies who live in space and are evil.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe.
furiously.
Yeah, rocking furiously from side to side. Well, I mean, we got Dot and Bubble next week. Mm-hmm. Fingers crossed.
Well, I think in Dot and Bubble we'll get at least some kind of monster, but
let's hope so.
We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah.
The trailer showed the Tractators.
Oh, there is a Tractator, isn't there? Yeah, it's going to be the Tractators that come back, definitely. I'd put money on that if I was going. No, I wouldn't put money on it.
Right.
Right.
Okay. Any final thoughts?
No. Other than go and read Scott Gray's Doctor Who strips, and also check out Strontium Dog in 2008. It's a very well written strip by Alan Grant and John Wagner, illustrated by Carlos Esquerra. That would be my non Doctor Who recommendation.
Very good.
There you go.
All right. Well, thank you for listening to episode 247 of the Metabolus 2 podcast. I have been waving to a fantastic figure 73 yards away.
And I have been stretching out my hands to an apparition of myself from the future with David.
Foe from the future.
Foe from the future, exactly. It's the Watcher. No, I don't know. I mean, it's everything.
The moment has been prepared for. It's the end.
It's everything and nothing at the same time. The end, yes.
Yeah, there you go. This is Legopolis. This is a companion version of Legopolis.
It is.
And since she wasn't a Time Lord, she doesn't regenerate at the end.
That's true. Wow. There you go. In the dying seconds of the podcast, we've answered the mystery of
the Watcher.
Exactly.
Causal loop.
Work it out for yourselves. We can't.
So, yeah. Unfortunately, the Doctor is able to talk to the Watcher, because that would have been interesting if Ruby could have talked to
herself.
Her apparition.
Yeah, her old self. Maybe the old self would have been wearing a mask, so she wouldn't recognize herself. But who would recognize their old self anyway? Would I recognize myself at 86?
I thought it was very good that they had another actor play 80-year-old Ruby.
I thought that was a bit of a whiplash. They should have done better age makeup for her age 40. She looks exactly the same, in my opinion.
All she needs to age her is put on a pair of thick glasses.
Yeah, because everyone knows people who wear glasses are old and ugly.
Old and
exactly.
Decrepit.
Exactly. Let's not forget that.
She looked good for a 40-year-old.
Yeah, she reminded me. She
reminded me of a 20-year-old.
Yeah, she was rocking some Julia Sawala in whatever that sitcom with she was in, glasses, can't remember its name now, you know, the one with the old woman. Anyway, we're running over time, we're severely under,
but it's a vibe.
It slips through your fingers like you're grasping for an apparition of yourself from the future.
All right,
well, see you next week then, everyone.
Raven here. Lips, sparks fly from her fingertips, echoed voices in the night.